Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. It seems as a species we're grinding to a halt. If we're not sitting in our car or at our computers, we're sitting looking at our phones or binge-watching the latest streaming series. Studies show we now spend 70% of our time sitting or lying around. 70%. You've probably heard the saying sitting is the new smoking, but as well as being bad for our bodies, our stillness has been linked to falling IQs and an epidemic of mental ill health. And we can't blame the pandemic on everything. Human beings simply weren't born to be stationary. We were made to move. And today we'll look at the links between how we move and how we think and feel. So Caroline Williams is my guest today. She's written a great new book. It's called Appropriately Move. And she explores the emerging science of how movement opens up a hotline to our minds. She interviewed Nobel Prize winning scientists, yoga gurus, and practitioners of all kinds of movement. And the results are clear. Movement boosts our mood, our brain health, and can improve every aspect of our lives. Today we'll talk about how core strength is linked to stress control, why stretching tackles the mood-sapping effects of an overactive immune system, what dance can do for our emotional literacy, and why physical strength translates into emotional resilience. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Caroline Williams is a science journalist and editor. She's a consultant for and regular contributor to New Scientist and has also written for The Guardian, BBC Future and BBC Earth. She's worked as a radio producer and reporter for BBC Radio and holds a Bachelor's of Science in Biological Sciences and a Master's in Science Communication. She's the author of one previous book, My Plastic Brain, One Woman's Year-Long Journey to Discover If Science Can Improve Her Mind. And today, of course, we're talking about her brand new book, Move, How the New Science of Body Movement Can Set Your Mind Free. And here's my guest, Caroline Williams. Caroline Williams, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I love this book, Caroline. I have to tell you, the second it landed on my desk, I started flicking through it. I normally don't do that. I normally set things aside and have a batch where I go through books, but I started reading this and I couldn't put it down. You're one of those...
That's great. That's exactly what I want to hear.
Well, I think you're one of those rare people who has the gift of taking solid scientific facts and making them not only interesting to non-scientific people, but entertaining. So I'm wondering how you got into the field of science journalism. Did it choose you or did you choose it?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I mean, I kind of, if you tell my story of my career in a kind of, it's in a narrative, it sounds like it was all meant to be. So I started off when I went to university doing PE teacher training. That was my initial plan. And not because I was particularly sporty. In fact, I think my teachers would have raised their eyebrows a bit if they'd known that I was going off to study PE. But just because I didn't really like sitting around, and I thought, well, if I want a job, I don't want to be working in an office inside. That sounds awful. So I kind of reasoned it in my head that I was going to do PE teaching, and I was going to have biology as a side subject, and I was going to teach both. And then somewhere around the first year of my studies, I got distracted by the biology and got more interested in that. So I sort of ditched the PE and did a biology degree. And then the writing came in sort of around the third year when I realized I was one of those weird people who loved sitting in the library reading stuff and then writing it out. You know, everyone else hates that. But I remember the exact moment I was reading about learning in bees, and it just kind of, I thought it was just so fascinating that bees with a tiny brain can do these complicated things. And I just got really fascinated. And I thought, I wonder if there's a job where you can do this. And it turned out there was. It took me a while to get to it, but I got there in the end. And then, you know, after many years of sort of writing about the brain and that being my thing, it suddenly occurred to me that my own mind works best when my body is on the move. And I thought, well, I wonder if there's any science that explains that. You know, why do I feel so much more focused after a walk? And why is it that I feel very calm after an hour of yoga? You know, what's going on, body to mind? Is there anything in the science that can explain that? And so I got looking into that, and it turned out there was absolutely loads, and most of it hadn't really been written about before. So I was very happy, and that's how I ended up here.
Well, I can relate on some level, because I too wanted to teach PE, and then I didn't. And I also, when I was like mid-career and went back to school to make a career change, I loved going to the library. I was such a nerd. But I can relate on that level. And also on the movement. And this is one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you. We've done several shows over the past couple of years about the importance of movement outside, being outdoors. And I wanted to take this from a different angle, which you do. And you really look at how it can make us feel so much better and how that's related to the brain. So there's been a lot of discussion. Let's kick off with the outdoors thing first, because I heard this is one of the ways where you get most of your ideas, which is also true for me, is ponderous walks with your dog.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So I have a very big, very boisterous dog. He was basically bred to run up and down mountainsides in New Zealand, barking at the top of his voice. So he's not really one for suburban life, but he takes a lot of exercise. And it's brilliant. I mean, I do all my best work out walking. If I have a talk to do, or if I have an article to write and I get stuck, I jot down tools and go for a walk. But there's some really interesting research about why this helps. So there's different ways of walking that seem to have different mental effects. So if you go for a kind of a stomp, that seems to send, so it's almost like we have pressure points in our feet that send more blood whirling around our blood vessels, and which sends a boost to the brain, which may explain the kind of boost in focus and sort of just feeling good that you get from a good brisk walk. There's also the sort of mind wandering aspect of like a sort of a ponderous walk. So you're just walking at a pace that feels easy to you, and so that your mind can drift off. And we know what happens to the brain in that sort of state. So activity in the prefrontal cortex, which is a bit directly behind your forehead, gets temporarily turned down. And that's the bit of the brain that kind of restricts your thinking. It's usually very helpful if you're trying to solve a problem that you go to the most obvious thing first. But when that's taken out of the equation temporarily, it lets the mind go wider and just kind of capture ideas and put them together in ways that maybe you haven't thought of before. So going for a sort of a ponderous walk is a way to see something sort of through new eyes almost. Plus there's this wonderful effect that I love, that when you're moving forward through space, and this works particularly well when you're outside, it does something to our perception of time. So we tend to feel as if the past is behind our backs and the future is stretching out in front of our chest. And when we're moving through space in this way, there's been some psychology experiments that suggest that it makes the past feel further behind us and the future feel closer to us. So we feel like we're mentally making progress towards our goals, which is really lovely and sort of, and it's very interesting as well in terms of things like depression, where people tend to get stuck in these sort of repeating thoughts and get stuck in a loop. Actually moving forward can sort of help break that cycle a little bit. So it doesn't have to be walking. It can be any way of moving forward. It will have the same effect if you do it at the right sort of intensity that your mind can wander off.
Yeah, that's really interesting, that moving forward aspect of it. Also interesting, you say in the book that science is beginning to reveal how different ways of walking bring specific mental benefits depending on what you're trying to achieve, or, you know, different ways of moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So walking briskly sort of gives you a boost. And also we know that physical activity means the brain invests in architecture. So people that are more active over long, long periods of time, parts of the brain involved in memory are sicker. So our brain invests in architecture. So that link between physical and mental is a real one, and it's very important. But yes, you can, if you want to be more creative, then a sort of a long meandering walk is better. And so we can think of it as being work. We can take that time out of the day and go and do this in the knowledge that we're actually doing something to our mind that's probably more productive than sitting and hammering away at a keyboard and hoping that something comes up.
Yeah, it's really funny because I do all of my creative brainstorming and thinking outdoors, and then all of a sudden I'm ready to go back to the little square box that sits on my desk.
Yeah.
But I can't do it indoors. I'm incapable of doing it indoors. So maybe that's a good thing.
So there is something about, I mean, I was just thinking this myself because I had a call a little bit earlier, then I had a half an hour window before I was due to talk to you. And I thought, well, do I have time to take the dog out? And actually, no, I didn't. So I jumped around the lounge for a bit and thought, come on, I need to get some blood moving. And it's not the same. It just isn't the same. There's something calming about being in the fresh air, you know, with the wind and the trees and the birds and, you know, all these other things. They're calming. And so even though there's research done in lab that shows these body-to-brain benefits exist, wherever we are, I think there's something extra about being outside, and it's definitely where I like to do most of my exercise and movement.
Right. So I want to just go back to something you touched on, and that was how the brain's architecture expands. I read one section in the book where you're talking about the hippocampus part of the brain, mm-hmm. and it expands. When we exercise, the brain responds by physically adding more capacity. On the flip side of that, you say that if we don't use it, we kind of lose it.
Mm, yes. It's a sad thing. And it's kind of, there's really some really interesting research that links that to our evolutionary history as hunter-gatherers, because at some point when our ancestors started roaming further to search for food, we linked together in our physiology the fact that we need to not only be able to walk and run and dig and swim and climb and, you know, travel long distances in search of food, you also need to be able to think. You know, you can't just sort of hope that an antelope comes along and sort of falls over dead in front of you. You have to plan it and track an animal and work together in teams and remember the way home. There's lots of cognitive stuff that's involved. And so when we're active, our brain invests in this brain capacity to support that. And the brains take a lot of energy to run. And if we don't use the brain, then we do cut capacity. In the same way that our muscles become weaker, our brains don't invest in things that aren't going to get used. So it's quite scary, really. I mean, there's all kind of really terrifying statistics that I found, that things like 13% of Alzheimer's cases can be traced to a sedentary lifestyle. So that's not to say that being active means you will never definitely get Alzheimer's or other kinds of dementia, but if you want to protect the brain and keep it as healthy as possible, then because of our evolutionary history, movement is not an option. We have to. I mean, that's sort of how we were built. And if we don't do it, then it all starts to fall apart slightly.
Yes. Let's throw some other facts out there while we're talking about that. The average, this was horrifying to me, the average modern adults spend 70% of their life sitting or lying completely still. And on top of that, I interviewed somebody a few months back, and studies there show that 80% of Americans spend an inordinate amount of time indoors. They spend 80% of their time indoors, excuse me. So add to that, they're indoors 80% of the time, and most of the time they're sitting or lying perfectly still. That is not good. Not good.
No, it's really not. And, you know, we are clever creatures, but we have basically built a world for ourselves where movement is optional. You know, you can get all your food delivered. You can even meet a life partner online if you really want to. You know, you don't have to move to survive. And we're the only animals that can do that. We don't have to move to keep warm because we've got nice heated homes. So really, being that it's non-negotiable, we need to seek it out and we need to build it back into our lives, because we've sort of forgotten that it's there, and because we're not doing it, we've forgotten this link to the way we think and feel. So it's kind of just trying to build that back into people's lives in a way that isn't preachy and isn't about you need to be fitter, you need to do more exercise, you need to look a certain way. Just to remind people that actually this is what your body wants and what your brain needs and what your mind needs, and you'll feel a lot better and happier as a result.
Right. And, you know, there are lots of studies showing that, you know, people who sit on social media all the time have a tendency toward depression and anxiety. And you talk about links to your studies on self-esteem. But, you know, improve self-esteem when you feel good and your body's strong and you feel more confident. But this surprised me, too, that cognitive skills take a hit when we sit for long periods of time. And you talk about a study or studies in Norway that look at the IQ scores of young men in the same family and how they declined over several decades. And that's not due to genetics.
No. I mean, genetics doesn't, you know, genetic traits are complicated and things don't change. Evolution doesn't happen over, you know, a few consecutive generations. So there has been, for as long as IQ tests have been done, there's been a steady rise around the world in IQ. It's been called the Flynn effect. So people have been getting seemingly smarter. But then in the last sort of 10, 20 years, it started to slow down and then stop and run into reverse. So there was all this question about, well, what's going on? Is, you know, some people were saying some quite controversial things about, oh, maybe it's immigration and, you know, what's going on? And, you know, but this study from Norway shows that this is happening within generations. So it has to be environmental. It can't be genetic. And obviously, sedentary lifestyles aren't the only change, but they are a pretty major change that's happened in our lifestyles. And given what we know about how the brain responds to exercise and activity, it's kind of a good place to start, I think, in trying to turn this thing around. I mean, obviously, what I'm not saying is that if you don't do physical activity, you know, you're going to be stupid, or
if
you do loads, you're going to become a genius.
Right.
You know, there is a genetic bar that we all, you know, top bar that we can all reach. But if we want to reach our potential, then yeah, and this stuff isn't negotiable, unfortunately. And the strength stuff and anxiety is really interesting, because that's one thing that people tend to neglect. So
yeah,
this link is really, really strong between being physically stronger and having higher self-esteem, you know, lower risk of anxiety, and that's regardless of whether you're doing any cardio or any other kind of exercise. So I think that's one thing that's really, really important, that doesn't have to involve lifting weights. It could involve just sitting on the floor more often, so that you have to strengthen your legs by getting up and down all the time. But strength is something really important for improving self-esteem, that you just feel more powerful in your life and you just feel better and more confident about life.
Absolutely. And the small things that, you know, would stress you out if you're not feeling particularly physically fit and, you know, ergo not particularly mentally fit, they just seem inconsequential when you feel strong and confident in your body. But this isn't just about going to the gym. And I want to bring that up because you do stress that, you know, going to the gym isn't necessarily the answer. It's not necessarily enough or the right way to do it. And I want to just talk about this because, you know, I work, as many do, on the computer all the time. I mean, I'm sure you spend a great deal of time on it, too. And I've lost count of the number of 10, 11, 12 hour days I've had over the past 3 months because of a certain situation, that I've had literally sat there at my computer for that many hours, you know, not taking breaks, not moving around, just getting this done. So what is the answer if you're in those situations? Because I know many people who work in the tech field, for this, this is a normal day.
Yeah, and I do feel, I feel the pressure of that myself. You know, today's been one of those days where I've been really busy and I haven't, you know, I've taken my dog out for a long walk this morning, but after that, by and large, it hasn't involved a lot of moving. The way I sort of do it at home is I try and move positions. So I'll start up in my office maybe and then go and sit on the floor for a bit and then go to the kitchen table, take little dance breaks if necessary. It's kind of building things in little and often. Even just stopping and having a big stretch, that helps get things moving in your body. Sort of. So the interesting stuff about stretching is that it seems to have an anti-inflammatory effect in the fascia, which is sort of the slimy coating that goes over the muscles and helps and slides around when we move. And so just taking a little time to do even a stretch or go up and downstairs to get a cup of tea and come back again, anything is better than nothing. But yeah, I mean, I wish it was easier. People keep asking me about standing desks and you know, treadmill desks and things like that. And I'm not convinced that's the answer. I think we need variety as much as possible. But yeah, there are inevitably those days where you are banging your head off the desk. And I did feel a bit of a fraud in the last days of writing the book when I sat there typing for 8 hours straight about how important it was to move. I struggle with it the same way.
Yes. So, and I can tell you, I have four different desks and I rotate around throughout the day, and I have a standing desk. But even at that, you know, I'll find sometimes, like the other day, I was really focused on this presentation I was putting together. And when I went to move, my legs felt they felt glued to the floor. My feet felt glued to the floor. And I was like, okay, Vicky, that's it's not good. You need to just wiggle your hips a bit more when you're standing there.
Yeah, it's true. Even some days, I mean, when it's inevitable, I think, it's, you know, there's an argument to make for not beating yourself up too much about it. But just even just noticing that, you know, today I haven't moved as much as I would like to, and I don't feel amazing. I don't feel like I'm going to fall into bed and feel relaxed and like, you know, a day well done. So even just realizing that that's not good and sort of having it as an ideal to aim for, getting more movement in your day when it's less busy, I think is certainly worth aiming for. Because what we don't want is to have another stick to beat ourselves with. We've already got enough things that we should be doing.
Right.
And even things like, you know, the core exercise being linked to stress, that there's a way of sitting that, you know, there's sitting slouched and there's sitting upright and engaging your core. And so that will help with the connections that I probably don't have time to go into in detail, but the connections between the brain and the adrenal glands that suggest bracing your core does regulate the stress response. So there's that going on. But also, even better, laughter is the best core exercise there is, so you don't need to get down and crunch, just maybe watch some hilarious videos. I mean, I'm a big fan of cat and dog videos on Instagram, so yeah, you can take some breaks for a bit of a laugh.
Right. So I love all this, and so you're not talking, you know, adding a million more things to do to our day and timing ourselves and all this stuff. It's just keeping ourselves moving. And
little and often is the way forward, if at all possible. I'm not saying don't go to the gym and don't lift the weights, because, you know, that's great. But for most people who aren't doing enough in terms of, you know, the physical goals, then little and often is about the best way you can do it. But, you know, the hunter-gatherers that exist in the world still, and the people who live the longest in the world, in these blue zones they're called, don't do what we think of as exercise, but they do keep moving, and it seems to do them pretty well. So yes, little and often, as much as you can.
Yeah, and I know you touched on weight training as relieving anxiety, and I have to tell you, it's my favourite thing to do at the gym, and I haven't done it in a long time because of situation with COVID, but it is my all-time favorite at the gym. I find it that strength and that gives you the confidence, you know, to accomplish things that you talked about earlier. Let's talk a little bit about rest, because that's something I think sometimes we think we're doing and we don't do it particularly well. You know, for example, if you've got a really busy schedule, you want to sit for 30 minutes with a cup of tea or whatever, and then you're thinking, oh, I should be looking, and you start flicking through something, and so you're really not resting, you're multitasking, which we all know is ineffective. So talk about rest.
It can't actually be done. Yeah, so it's interesting, because very few people ask me about this part of the book, which is all about rest, but I think it's really important as a partner to all the movement, because there's been work done in the psychology of rest, not huge amounts, but just, you know, but some recently. And in a survey of thousands of people, something like 60% of people said that they didn't feel they were getting enough rest. Now, if we look at the fact that, you know, the average adult spends 70% of time sedentary, then it just seems that whatever we're doing with all this sitting and lying around, we're not finding it particularly restful. So there needs to be a new way. So I think we need to rethink rest as well as movement. And it doesn't have to be still. Sometimes moving is a perfect way to rest. Anything that kind of takes your mind off your troubles, or, you know, gets rid of some tension that you've been holding, counts as rest. I'm a big fan of kitchen dancing, putting on some cheesy 80s music and just leaping around for a bit. And that's sort of my rest and stress buster at the end of the day. So I think it's almost a case of trying to tune into what the body is telling you that you need. And, you know, right now for me, for example, I need to do some stretches on the back of my shoulders because I've been doing too much sitting. Mm. Other days I'm restless because I've been doing too much sitting and I got too much pent-up energy, so I'll put some music on and dance around. You know, it's kind of tuning into what you need, and then that can be your rest. But just by default flopping down, I don't think really does the trick.
Right, and I'm glad you brought that up, that tuning in, we need to tune into our body, because some days, you know, I might need to go meditate on the beach for, you know, 20 minutes. Other days, I like to jump on my little trail bike and bomb through the woods like I'm 6 years old and splash through the puddles. I mean, it's just whatever you feel you need in that time to burn some energy and to recalibrate yourself, basically.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, it does vary from day to day. Most of the stuff that I like to do, it involves taking me down from somewhere, you know, high up in a high stress zone where I've got to be doing, and calming down. Sometimes, yeah, I need to run up a hill or something. But it also varies from person to person, you know. So where I live, lots of people like road biking and going up very steep hills. Not my cup of tea at all, but maybe some people need that level of high energy exercise to relax. So it kind of really varies. So yeah, tuning into your body and what it needs and what your mind needs, and then choosing some form of rest or activity that gets you where you want to be is really, you know, that's the ultimate goal that we're looking for.
Right. And I just want to remind listeners that the book is called Move, and how the new science of body movement can set your mind free, because that's what this is all about. You did some fascinating research, and as I said at the start, made it very entertaining. Do you have a favorite story of you also talked with people who shared their stories. Do you have a favorite story?
See, my favorite person that I sort of came across during my research was the guy called Terry Kabasnik, who is in the Fighting Fit chapter, and he is an acrobat, stage acrobat. I first came across him watching Kylie Minogue show in like 2001 or something crazy, and then I sort of looked him up because I wanted to know how it felt to move your body the way he did. He was doing these amazing backflips from a crouch, just crouching with his knees against his chest and then exploding into this leap and then going back to a crouch and doing it four or five times. I was like, wow, I need to find that dancer. And I eventually managed to find him. Turns out he's British. He's living in California, and he's gone by being a stuntman. And he now uses his skills to teach kids how to, as far as they're concerned, do these amazing tricks and the flips and, you know, parkour and martial arts and things like that. But what he's really trying to get across to them is resilience and using their bodies to, you know, learn to get over their fears and to bounce back from things and to get somewhere using their body. And he's done some amazing work with young people, and he also does stuff with he's done breakdancing classes with old people. Mm. You know, seated breakdancing, which I think is just amazing. But he told me this wonderful story about how having your body able to react and be strong and agile actually saved his life. He was riding his moped through Las Vegas, I think it was at the time. No, Los Angeles, I think it was. And he was coming up to a junction, and somebody pulled up in front of him. And he says that he didn't think, his body just clicked into action, and he sprung up and using his motorbike as a launch pad, and did a somersault over the car, rolled on his back, and then just popped up on his feet, sort of 30 meters across this junction. And then his sort of mind caught up, and he was like, what the heck, you know, and he just flopped down on the floor. But it was just this lovely example of how having this strength and agility in your back pocket, it can just really be important for saving your life, but also for getting through life and feeling like you can manage stuff. So I think he was my favorite guy. I've got about 2.5 hours of interview audio from him, which I just couldn't use all of, but it was just a fascinating conversation. So there are people out there who just know this stuff implicitly and they're putting it into practice. And I think that's wonderful. You need more people like them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I remember when, I was a kid, I had a horse. And so I fell off all the time. And you learn to, you know, relax and roll. And that saved me many times when I've tripped as a grown doing something really, I just relax and roll, and people go, "Why are you so relaxed during that?" It's just instinctive.
Yeah, something kicks in if your body knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
Then yeah, it can save you in all kinds of ways.
But, yeah.
Definitely worth learning.
So I think this science is game changing, and I'm wondering, now that you've gone through this process and you've learned all this information and you're sharing it with everyone, what are you incorporating in your daily life? What are you taking into your daily life about this, from this?
Well, you know, I've been spending a lot of time moving around, sitting on the floor. That's something I definitely do. I also have just sort of tried to build it into my routine as something that is... that it counts as work. So when I go out for a walk, I don't feel like I'm skiving anymore. I kind of say, okay, this is what I need to do. We have it ingrained into us, even though I haven't had a boss for, 20 years.
Yeah.
It's sort of ingrained into us. We need to sit still and think big thoughts whilst writing stuff down. And I think, no, we don't need to do that. Taking breaks to go out and think in a different way can reset you. It can help you think in a different way. It can lift mood and get the boring stuff done faster. So I've really just changed the way I think about movement, and started doing weird things like, when I'm stroking my cat, I do little go down and squat on my haunches and things like that for flexibility and for strength in my legs. So it's just a matter of building stuff in, and doing more kitchen dancing as well. I think that's probably the biggest thing that's changed in my life.
Right. Well, the book is fascinating. It's a really good read. I know you've researched it intensely. Listeners can find out much more about you and your work at carolinewilliams.net. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Caroline?
I guess a final thought is to find something that works for you and do it for the way it makes you feel. And then even if it doesn't change the way you look or anything else that, society tells you is important, then you will be having a good time and feeling better. So, find the thing and do it for you.
Perfect. And again, the book is called Move, How the New Science of Body Movement Can Set Your Mind Free. And you can find out more about Caroline at carolinewilliams.net. Caroline Williams, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for talking to us. I'm really good fun.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.